How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast. And today, Jono and I will be talking through how to craft your AFLW fantasy team. We're super excited that the AFLW fantasy season is upon us, and it's now time for everyone to start thinking about what their team might look like. And to help along with that, we've created quite a few resources this pre-season. So if you're a beginner and you haven't played AFLW fantasy before, or you haven't played any fantasy sports before, rather, and you want to cover some of the basics like how the cash and the trading works, you can go check out the AFLW article page. We've got some articles on how the basics of fantasy work, and that'll be a really helpful starting point for you. If you're at the next level and you're familiar with fantasy sports, but you want to learn more about how AFLW fantasy works and some of the key players and things to look out for this coming season, this is the episode for you.
Yes, and if you are looking for expert content because you are familiar with the AFLW fantasy game, but you want to hear how this season's rule changes, off-season trades, any role changes that might have come on the squads, how those are going to impact our fantasy targets for 2026, then stay tuned. We've just released our launch episode and we have our strategy episode coming right up for some of the big changes in 2026.
So to start off with, some of the basic strategies of AFLW fantasy. We've got 12 rounds this season, which is great. And the point of fantasy is to score as many points as you can across those 12 rounds. Some people will be aiming to win the whole fantasy competition out of all the 20,000 so people that play, or coaches that play. And for this, you get a great prize or maybe some cash or a hat if you're top 100. But for others, playing fantasy is less about that and more about just being competitive in their league of mates. So whatever it is that you want to get out of fantasy, we've got some good advice for you.
I've got to say, I'm still smarting from last season's loss in our home league in the grand final. So definitely keen to be taking that home myself this season. There's a lot of different strategies as well that you can take into these AFLW fantasy seasons. On the one hand, we've got sort of a guns and rookies approach, which I think has been the predominant strategy of recent years. The idea being you're paying up for the expensive players in the game who are going to score the most points. And on the other hand, you have some rookies, players who are coming in at very, very cheap prices. This season starting as low as $200,000. And then over the course of the season, their price rises. You can sort of trade them out, getting in cheaper players and saving a bit of money so that you can upgrade other rookies to those other guns. On the other side of things, maybe you're thinking, well, if what some players are underpriced and they're starting at that, you know, going to outscore what their average is, maybe I'll do that for every player. And that's sort of the other end of the scale where we've got the mid-priced madness approach, where generally, you know, someone might be priced at, say, getting 50 points a game. They come out and they average 80 for the season. Suddenly you've made, you know, a whole lot more than anyone else has because all of your players have gone up in price. So I think that's also a very, very handy approach, but you know, there's risks with both. I think the guns and rooks approach can be kind of slow and you can miss out on some opportunities to score early in the season, but the mid-price madness, if you miss and you're getting on a player who doesn't take that next step you're expecting, that can also really set you back in the season as well. So definitely something to keep an eye on.
Oh, but when it works, when that mid-price madness strategy works and you've just taken a gamble on a whole bunch of random mid-priced players and a couple of them pop off, there's no better feeling than saying that you were right. But yes, so two kind of different strategies there. And because you mentioned the guns and rookies strategy is normally more popular, it does kind of change how, like, you might start off with that, but you're, it's not kind of like you pick one of these strategies for the season and you lock it in. There's usually a bit of an evolution as the weeks go past, which we'll pick up a little bit soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the longer the season goes, the less you're worried about value necessarily, and you're more worried about just getting as many points on field. You want the high price players. So I think it's not just the sliding scale between the two approaches of guns and rooks and mid-price madness, but also as the season goes on, you start tending towards just having the best value, the best points you can get on field as possible.
Yeah, and how you get those points is by picking the right players. So there's kind of two buckets of players when we think about it. There's undervalued players and there's fully priced players. And technically there's a third bucket, which is overvalued players, but we don't really want to be going down that path.
We're not picking those, that's for sure.
That's not how you win. On the undervalued players, there's a few key things that we like to look out for, especially in preseason. One of them is players that have had a change in role. So this might be someone who's previously played, say, on the forward line and had average scoring, but they're expected to change lines in the preseason, or maybe we've seen them do this just at the back end of the prior season, and that change in role has led to a big boost in their fantasy scoring. It's more suited to them, to the club, to the game plan, etc. A classic example of this would be someone like Britt Gutknecht. We saw her move in from the forward line to the back line last season, and with that, her fantasy average increased 50%. So that's the type of player that if you get a whiff of a role change coming, could be a great one to be putting in your fantasy side early. Another key thing that we look for in undervalued players is if there's been a change in their club. Last year, the highest scoring fantasy player on the platform was Laura Gardner, and she is a classic example of this. When she was playing previously at Geelong, she was one of many midfielders at the club. She wasn't really on the elite kind of core group, and as a result, she just wasn't really in the competition as much, getting a little bit overlooked. But then when she moved to Sydney, she had the midfield to herself there, and she absolutely showed what she was made of. She racked up those fantasy points like nothing we've ever seen over the last couple of seasons, and then took away the highest fantasy scoring player last season. So when you see players change club, this can be a great signal that there might be a fantasy boost coming for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's such an impressive breakout. Is there anyone, Mel, that you've got your eye on who might have changed clubs last season? I know for one, I'm looking at a player like Ella Slocum, who's come out of the North Melbourne side across to West Coast. I'm pretty keen to see what they can do over there. How about yourself?
Well, I mean, sticking with North Melbourne, Georgia Stubbs will be an interesting one, who has recently left North Melbourne as well. But it can't really go past Anne Hatchard.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, moving from Adelaide to the Gold Coast, where she was admittedly one of the two great midfielders at Adelaide, but Gold Coast, she's got even more room to play, will be very exciting to see.
Yeah, 100%. That's if we've got change in role, number one, change in club, number two, things to look out for. Number three is going to be an injury to a key player. So this kind of results in a change in role as well. So definitely related there. But basically, if you've got a player who's playing a pretty important role to the club and they go down with injury, it's going to often cause a bit of a reshuffle of players. So classic example last year, we saw at GWS, Elise Parker, who's their midfield bull, unfortunately broke her ankle in round one. And so she had to miss the rest of the season. And we saw Zali Goldsworthy kind of step out of the forward line role that she'd kind of been earmarked for the season, back into the midfield, and was an absolute superstar. So I think that's the sort of thing we want to look out for there as well. And then lastly, sometimes there are players who just have that a role that completely suits how their team wants to play the game. And as a result, a lot of the opportunities for scoring are sort of coming their way. So I think a classic example of this would be at West Coast. They play a very contested possession football game and they want to get the ball moving quickly. So what it results in is a lot of stoppages and midfield players like Ella Roberts, who absolutely excel in those situations and can burst out the front of stoppage. That's who they're trying to get the ball in the hands of, and they're trying to give her as many opportunities to do so. So I think that's the sort of thing we're looking for when we're sort of analyzing how teams play and who's going to benefit from that.
Yeah, I think these are kind of ranked almost in difficulty. I mean, it's very easy to see in the off season when a player has changed club or if you've heard anything in the preseason about them changing role. Injury to a key player leaves a bit more thinking required to think who might substitute in and take that role. And then the team game plan benefits a really great one if you can get onto it, but does require a little bit more kind of thinking and piecing together for the fantasy side. But these are all key things that you can be thinking about in the preseason and throughout the season for picking your underpriced players. But there's also value in picking overpriced. There's no value in picking overpriced players, but there is value in picking fully priced players. So you might want to pay, like a fully priced player is someone whose average matches their price, and you You're not really going to expect a lot of headroom for that price, but this can be good for players that you just want to keep in your side for an extended period of time. And the reason you might do that is either they provide consistency of scoring, so they might not be the highest scorer, but you know what you're getting and you can kind of count on it. It kind of takes the risk out a little bit, but also might take out the reward. But also the ceiling, so or the kind of elite players that is worth paying up for because they are able to hit those really high fantasy scores that no one else can really do. And I think a classic example of this over previous years is Ebony Marinoff. She's one of a handful of players that can hit over 160 fantasy points in a game. She's very expensive because of it. You don't pick her because you expect her average to increase, but you pick her because you want that ceiling option. And if it can really make or break your week if you don't have her, especially when we're talking about captaincy potential as well. You need those players for that ceiling to be able to keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that captaincy point at the end there, having the points doubled as a result, that can obviously make your weekend turn a good score into a great score. So 100% the big thing to look out for there.
So that's a little bit on the types of players that we'll be thinking about picking for our starting squad and throughout the season. But the other key part of fantasy is the traits. So just starting off with a bit of the structure that we can expect to see in 2026 here. Our starting side will have 21 players on the field. So 6 defenders, 8 midfielders, 1 ruck and 6 forwards. And then a handful of players on the bench as well. A couple of defenders and midfielders, 2 forwards, 1 ruck and 1 bench utility. So when we're thinking about the trades, we're kind of sticking within our lines here, except for a few exceptions.
Yes. So I would say that the key thing here is that for the first time we have DPP, dual position players, which is a term you might hear a little bit this season. And it comes with players who are listed as not just midfielders, not just forwards, but both midfielders and forwards. When you're selecting your starting side, you can pop them in either position. But the key thing is that they're only going to contribute to that one position. So if you were to select an emergency and your mid-forward player was in your midfield position, they're going to cover any missing players that are on your midfield on-field. Unfortunately, though, if you have all of your 8 midfielders play, your bench player who has mid-forward DPP is your emergency, and then a forward misses and you don't have a forward emergency playing, that DPP player is not going to cover you, even though they're listed as a forward, because you've popped them in the midfield spot. So you've got to make sure that you're very clear about where you're placing your players on your bench if you're trying to make sure that they're counting towards an emergency spot.
And the emergency is the utility?
Emergency is utility. Utility is the one exception to this rule. You can pop them down for any position. It'll give you the choice.
Fantastic. And we've only got this dual position in the mid forward. There's no other combinations going on here.
It's the only one we have.
So it shouldn't make it too difficult.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I'm already a bit confused as someone that doesn't play the men's, but I'm looking forward to picking up this new dynamic. So what else do we need to be thinking about with our trades?
Yes. So now that we've got our starting side, we know our 21 players on field and our 8 further ones on the bench. The question is, how do we improve it across the season? So every week we're going to be given 3 trades, starting between rounds 1 and round 2, which means that you'll have 36 trades across the season. In most seasons, the idea that we're going to start with as many good players as we can with a smattering of value, and that probably means you'll end up with somewhere in the rounds of 8 to 10 really good players, and then the rest will be sort of more of those undervalued ones, whether or not you've got a lot of those mid-price players or a lot more of those rookies. That's up to you. And the goal that we're going to have across the season is to be using those trades every week to sort of, you know, get the best value out of our squads and to upgrade our players to the best 21 that we can have as soon as possible. I think it's going to be tricky across just the 12 weeks, but if we can get a full 21 on field of excellent players, I think you're going to be in a great position to be winning your home league or winning a hat or a car.
So with our rounds then, I mean, we've put a lot of effort into our starting squad, which is great. But then when we get to trades, for the first couple of weeks, I feel like the trades are really about fixing up your starting squad. So there's going to be unexpected things that always happen. And when they happen at the start, they're a bit of a bummer, but you want to be making sure you fix those as soon as possible. So things like You've picked a rookie that you were really excited to see break out in the first few weeks and doesn't look like they're going to be playing. You don't really want to have a non-playing player on your side so early at the start necessarily, because it's all about getting that cash gen quickly. So we'll want to be trading out rookies that didn't play, rookies that didn't even make the squad, or some other players that might not have played due to injuries that have just happened. And then on the flip side, you want to be trading in any roles that look really, really good. So up until the first couple of rounds, we've only had match sims and the practice games to be able to suss who looks like they're going to be in for a big year. But round one and two, if you see a player that you're like, I need them, this is the time to quickly get them in before they increase in cash too much and you've just lost your opportunity. A couple of good ones that we saw last season for here might be like a Montana Ham. We were waiting for her breakout year. She started round one last year looking great. And it was worth paying up for her early.
Yeah. So I think that's a helpful way of looking at the first couple rounds, you'd say, Mel. Looking at rounds one and two as the main targets there is just fixing up those early starting squads.
Yep.
Yeah. Great. And from there, we're probably from round three onwards, I think the direction of our trades is going to change. So at that point, we're looking at making upgrades. So the idea of taking the cash that our rookies have made and sort of piling it on top of each other to bring ourselves up to those more expensive players. So if we're looking at, I suppose, how we're going to be doing that, generally what we're going to be doing is we've got the three trades. Two of our trades are going to be ideally taking someone who is, you know, sort of capped out in value, who's made a little bit of money. We're going to take them down to another player who looks like they might make a little bit of money. And then with that last trade, hopefully we'll have made a few hundred thousand with those first two trades. With that third trade, we'll take maybe a mid-pricer or another rookie, and we'll just trade them up to the highest player that we really, really want in our sides. So this doesn't have to be the best player in the game, because again, a lot of those players are overvalued, but it's just someone who you think is going to score really, really well. Now, the tricky thing here is that we talk about doing two down, one up, but the game never quite works like that, because inevitably you end up with injuries that are going to derail everything. So sometimes that becomes, you know, maybe a one up, one down. You can't get quite as high with that second trade, but you need to be spending that third trade fixing up an injury. So I think generally with these trade-ins, we're looking for people that we think are reliable, because you don't want to trade someone in and then find out 2 weeks later, oh, they're my problem again. So I think when you're looking making these upgrades, you're trying to make sure you get to someone you can really trust. And with those trade outs, again, you generally want to do it once you think they've made as much money as they're going to, or at least the majority of it. You don't want to trade someone out and then they keep making, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 more dollars, and suddenly you've kind of only cashed out half of what you could.
Yeah, timing really is everything with this trading out, especially on the rookies. You want to be looking for when they've plateaued, but not trading them out too early. And I think the one up, two down approach is really tricky in practice. I think something I end up often doing, catching myself, is really building for the one up and then making sacrifices or just taking whoever for the two down to make it work. Or build, you know, focusing the trades around the two down and then just getting the one up as whoever fits the pattern. Being able to get three players each trade that are what you want and fits with the cash you have is really difficult, but boy, is it worth it.
Yeah. No, 100%. And I do think that is one of the things that catches people out the most, is the idea that they get sort of maybe two players that they really want, and then the third one is someone that just sort of suits the trades, and then they end up really unhappy with that person. So I think, like, even if it doesn't mean like the perfect trades, I would still try and focus on getting three people where you're happy with all of them, because over the long run of the season, you know, all these little adjustments that you make to get in the right players are going to add up, and it's going to make a big difference by the end of the season. So trying to make sure you're happy with who you're getting, preferably someone you've seen play so that you know that you can trust the role, that always helps. But that's definitely my biggest tip each season, and something I have to constantly remind myself of.
Yeah, we talk a lot about watch and wait. It comes up a lot when we're not quite confident yet on a player. But watch and wait really requires you to then watch the player, I think, even though it's not what it means necessarily. So, yeah, picking players that you've actually seen and you're comfortable with is quite important. And then when we get past week 8 or round 8, There's a few weeks left. This is where you ideally are zigzagging your way to success. This is where the strategy can really shift. We mentioned the areas of underpriced players previously around the role and the club and the game plan, but an area that comes into play here particularly is the fixture. If you're in a good position, really paying attention to who you might want to upgrade to or sideways to based on that ideal matchup, especially when you've only got a few games left each kind of for the remaining weeks. You want to make sure that the matchups are going to be as flattering as possible to any player's fantasy scoring that you bring in. Admittedly, this is not something I think about too early in the season, but definitely in the last period. What about you, Jono?
Yeah, I think looking for those unique players is such a big part of the strategy late in the season, but it does need to be late in the season. I feel like so many people get trapped trying to focus on it early, and it means that, you know, if things go wrong, you're really caught out on your own and you're in a lot of trouble. So I think sort of building a little bit safer early in the season can be helpful. Which is not to say not to jump on any unique player. Obviously, if you're very happy with someone, then go right ahead. But yeah, I definitely think that at the end of the season, finding someone like Will I did last year, where they brought in Charlie Mullins, and how exceptional that was to helping them climb the ranks late in the year. So yeah, definitely a helpful strategy.
Yeah, and then based on where you're at in the season, whether you're just trying to stay with the pack or if you're trying to break apart, will kind of change what trades you do, but we've got quite a few weeks before then. So if you're new to AFLW Fantasy and using this as your guide, don't worry, we'll have plenty of more content out before we get to rounds 9 to 12. So we hope you'll be learning along the way with us as we go and that you really get a good season out of AFLW Fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, everyone. Looking forward to chatting with you more across this preseason.
Catch you later.
Bye.